special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
I'm Janitara Begum, and I work in Operation Unite, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC. ACRA.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA, and you've tuned in to the WGXC Morning Show. And today we will hear from Gary Nelson, a longtime activist and advocate for public transportation and in the environment locally. We will also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather, the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Jason Martin from Troy finishes singing this song. Then it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
This is the
news.
This is the network.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Kenneth C. Crow II reports in the Times Union that Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin has been diagnosed with prostate cancer. The 59-year-old McLaughlin said in a statement, and I quote, "My doctors are mapping out a course for treatment and recovery, which we will be pursuing. Fortunately, my doctors believe they detected the prostate cancer early and believe there is a very good chance of beating back the cancer," end quote. McLaughlin said he will work through the cancer treatment. McLaughlin said in a statement, and I quote, "My diagnosis is a reminder of how prevalent prostate cancer is and that so many are at risk for diseases of this type. Early detection can save lives and beat cancer. I urge everyone to get a preventative checkup with their doctor to stay healthy and detect early," end quote. McLaughlin's trial on felony charges of allegedly misusing campaign funds and falsifying campaign financial reports is scheduled to begin January 23, 2023. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports for the Times Union that an Ulster County judge threw out the county's legislative district map December 13th after determining that it violated state requirements for redistricting. An independent committee appointed by the county legislature was responsible for redrawing the district lines after the 2020 census to ensure the population was fairly represented. However, the committee misrepresented a 2021 change in state law and drew the districts incorrectly. The lawsuit was filed by four members of various Democratic committees, citing the misinterpretation, as well as the splitting up of the town of Gardiner into separate districts as grounds for the suit. In his order, State Supreme Court Justice Kevin R. Bryant said the map is unlawful and it, quote, "does not comply with mandatory state requirements for redistricting," unquote. Bryant ordered the commission to reconvene no later than December 17th and to produce a final map by January 3rd. The commission must prepare a draft map by December 27th so a public hearing can be held. If the commission fails to finalize a new map by January 3rd, a special master will be appointed to draw it and the Ulster County will have to pay the bill. Though the Redistricting Commission has been aware of its error for more than 2 months, County officials said they refused to reconvene until a lawsuit compelled them to do so. Ulster County Republican Board of Elections Commissioner John Quigley agreed the map was incorrectly drawn, but said last month he would not approve a new map unless it was court-ordered. Democrats were incensed that the map split the town of Gardiner into two separate districts, which diluted Democratic power in the county, according to Gardiner Democratic Committee Chair Tom Kruglinski. The new district lines will not be applied until legislative elections in 2023. Read the full story in the Times Union.
The Berkshire Eagle reports that Troy Sargent, 38, of Pittsfield, was sentenced to 14 months in prison on December 12th for his role in the January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Sargent pleaded guilty to felony charges of assaulting, resisting, or impeding officers during the January 6 attempted coup, and also civil disorder and four related misdemeanor offenses. Around 2:30 p.m. during the melee, Sargent swung his open hand toward a U.S. Capitol police officer, striking him. The officer then told Sargent and others around him, and I quote, "Do not start attacking people," end quote. Soon after, Sargent swung at the same officer, but instead hit someone in the crowd. He later wrote on social media, and I quote, "I got two hits in on the same rookie cop," end quote. In addition to prison time, Sargent must complete 2 years of supervised release and pay $500 restitution and a $285 special assessment. And you can read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Raymond Pignon reports for Columbia Green Media that Greene County prosecutors have received a report on the state police analysis of videotapes recorded by cameras in the West Bridge Street apartment where a man was stabbed to death in November 2021, District Attorney Joseph Stanzione said December 12th. The details found on the tapes by investigators will not be released by the DA's office anytime soon, however. Quote, "The report can't be divulged before the time of the trial," unquote, Stanzione said. Quote, "The reason is we don't want to prejudice any jury pool one way or another," unquote. Kerry Weiser, 32, of Catskill, was indicted by a grand jury a month after 68-year-old Scott Myers of 39 West Bridge Street in Catskill was stabbed to death. Weiser has been charged with second-degree murder, a felony, and one misdemeanor count of criminal possession of a weapon. Myers installed video cameras in his apartment, and state police seized a hard drive containing recordings made inside the apartment. The content of the surveillance footage has been a long time coming. State police worked for months to crack the password on the drive and unlock the potential evidence. "The discovery process in the case is continuing," Stanzione said. Quote, "We'll go over the discovery materials and another court hearing will be scheduled," unquote, Stanzione said. Quote, "We're probably going to discuss probable cause issues and find out what will be permitted and what will not be permitted at trial," unquote. Weiser pleaded not guilty to all charges at her arraignment on December 17, 2021. In Greene County Court. She was denied bail and ordered held pending trial. No trial date has been set. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
The Daily Freeman reports that Governor Kathy Hochul has signed a bill from State Senator Michelle Henchy from Socrates promoting greater use of New York-grown industrial hemp. The bill, S-8496, instructs the Commissioner of Agriculture and Markets, in collaboration with the Urban Development Corporation, the State Hemp Work Group, and industry representatives, end I quote, to develop a plan to expand market opportunities for industrial hemp that would increase its use in manufacturing and construction materials, including packaging, textiles, and hempcrete, end quote, according to Hinchy's office. New York legalized cannabis last year, but hemp lacks the tetrahydrocannabinol that gets people high. Hemp can be made into rope, textiles, clothing, shoes, food, paper, bioplastics, insulation, and biofuel. Hinchy said in a statement, and I quote, "Hemp is the material of the future, and positioning New York as a leading producer of the world's industrial hemp supply is a winning strategy for fighting the climate crisis, bringing large-scale economic development to New York's rural communities, and unlocking new revenue sources to put our farmers in a better financial position," end quote. She added, and I quote, "I'm proud that my hemp bill has been signed into law directing our state to seek strategic collaborations to help us usher in a new era of manufacturing power, product creation, and rural economic development around an industry that is nearly untapped around the world, end quote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Greta Yoakum is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that union that represents employees at the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art in North Adams has a contract. Quote, after 14 months of bargaining, our members voted overwhelmingly in favor of ratifying our first contract. We're proud of having secured a strong agreement that we can build on, unquote, the union wrote on its social media page on December 12th. Quote, we are so grateful for everyone who helped us get here, unquote. Employees voted on April 2021 to form a union with UAW Local 210 AFL-CIO. The union has been 100 people employed in a variety of jobs at the museum, including curators, box office staff, office workers, and custodians. The contract was ratified by union members in late November. The pact includes, quote, meaningful wage increases for the majority of the membership, unquote, said Mero Elliott, a member of the union's bargaining committee who works as a manager of institutional giving at the museum. Quote, we are looking forward to supporting a stronger and more equitable Mass MoCA because of our efforts, unquote, Elliott said. Christy Edmonds, director of the museum, said in a statement, quote, this contract is a result of the willingness of each party to listen and genuinely consider the other's objectives and concerns, unquote. The agreement provides substantive pay increases, among other benefits, the museum said in a statement. As a result of frustration with the state of contract negotiations, the union staged a one-day strike in mid-August. That brief strike helped advance the union's goals, Elliott said. The union has also filed unfair labor practice complaints with the National Labor Relations Board, and one resulted in a retroactive pay bump after not receiving an expected raise. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup that residents of Greenville, Westerlo, Cairo, and Durham heard some kind of loud noise on December 10th that is so far unexplained. Greene County Emergency Services Director John P. Farrell Jr. said, and I quote, we took one call from a resident in the area of Route 67 and Route 41 stating they heard a loud explosion from the southwest that shook his house. A patrol car was sent and cleared with no disposition, which usually means it was unfounded, end quote. On social media, many theories circulated about the boom. A woman in Durham said it rattled her windows. A woman in Cairo said it startled her dog, so it fell off the sofa, while a Westerlo man speculated about an earthquake. But the U.S. Geological Survey did not report any earthquakes in the area. A Greenville man suggested it was a rare, and I quote, skyquake, end quote, but the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration spokesperson, John Moore, said that the National Weather Service in Albany did not receive any reports of the boom. Without any answers, a man from Cairo speculated a literary source. He said, and I quote, we have heard of these before. I always just figure it's old Rip Van Winkle playing some ninepins. End quote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, a chance of snow showers mainly after 4 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 35 degrees. There'll be more snow Thursday night before 1 a.m., then rain and snow with a temperature low of around 31 degrees. And on Friday, there will be rain with a temperature high near 36 degrees. And Friday night, rain and snow before 1 a.m., then a chance of snow with a temperature low of around 30 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Thursday, December 15th, tune in to WGXC 90.7 FM for all kinds of special local programming from around the world and around the corner. Music of Pakistan is featured on Transformational Listening at 11 a.m. Then it's time for Alan Skerritt's Crossroads in Rhythm show live from Columbia County. 2 p.m. What's the Frequency? Kenneth takes over 90.7 FM with a remix of the week's news with new music. Turn on the news at 3 p.m. and then at 4 p.m. the WGXC afternoon show is live from Hudson with Cilla Graham and Tom DiPietro as your hosts. 7 p.m. it's time for Catskill Cabin Getaway. Then at 8 p.m. we're live from Experimental Intermedia in New York City with a performance from Pauline Kim Harris on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
There is a Kwanzaa celebration put on by Operation Unite on December 17th at the Hudson Opera House, 5 p.m. It's an afternoon of arts and crafts for children. There's also dancing, drumming, a candle lighting ceremony, the sharing of the Nguza Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa, and more as Operation Unite puts on a Kwanzaa celebration Saturday, December 17th at 5 p.m. at the Hudson Opera House on Warren Street in Hudson. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
The Public News Service daily newscast, December the 15th, 2022. I'm Mike Clifford. First to Oklahoma, where a new Georgetown University study shows that state had the most favorable rate of improvement in the country for its number of uninsured children during the pandemic. The rate of kids without health insurance fell from 8.6% to 7.4% between 2019 and 2021. Boiling it down, that means 11,000 children in the state gained coverage in that two-year period. The study's lead author, Joan Alker, heads the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families.
So we find this kind of welcome mat that when you open the door for parents, children walk through that door too, and the whole family gets covered. This is great news whenever it happens, but especially in Oklahoma, which really had one of the highest child uninsured rates in the country.
The report shows the uninsured rate improved the most for kids in low-income families, but Alker points out those gains could be at risk when the federal public health emergency officially ends next spring. And Circular Cleveland is a new local initiative to keep consumer goods and materials in circulation as long as possible and out of the waste stream.
The project's leaders at the nonprofit Cleveland Neighborhood Progress point to lending tools, composting yard waste, and making art or usable goods out of plastic as examples of how to contribute to a sustainable economy. The effort comes after Cleveland stopped recycling nearly 2 years ago when the city was unable to obtain an affordable contract. Keith Harrison with the Recycling Partnership explains, despite the fact that most Americans want to recycle, many lack easily accessible or effective options.
So you put that want to recycle against the reality that 40 million American families just don't have the opportunity to recycle at their home.
Last year, Cleveland Neighborhood Progress and the city won a $476,000 grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to develop a circular economy roadmap to help the city achieve its climate action plan and sustainability goals. It's expected to be released early next year. Nadia Ramlagan reporting.
According to the EPA, only 9% of plastic is truly recycled. The rest ends up in landfills and takes up more than 400 years to degrade. Now from CNN, the House voted Wednesday evening to pass a stopgap bill to avert a government shutdown at the end of this week, with funding currently set to expire on Friday at midnight. The Senate could vote as early as today. This is PNS. Covering the cost of a college education just got more expensive as already stressed college students cope with the highest inflation rate in more than 40 years. A new report finds that while direct expenses such as tuition and fees are on the rise, so are indirect costs such as housing, gas, and groceries.
Many students in Indiana and across the nation are working multiple jobs just to pay for life's necessities. Maya Bell is a sophomore at Purdue University Northwest in Hammond. She says her studies as a double major in political science and human development are hard work, but paying for living expenses is becoming harder.
I used to spend $50 on groceries, and now I spend like $100. Gas is crazy. $40 doesn't even get me close to a full tank. I think there's just a lot of smaller factors that impede my academic and my professional work because I'm trying to make enough money to, like, live.
Mark Richardson reporting.
A Pennsylvania policy analyst group is adding its voice to the calls for Congress to bring back the expanded child tax credit for families in place during the pandemic.
The Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center says it could be included in the end-of-the-year spending package. When the expanded child tax credit was in effect, it helped boost millions of families above the federal poverty level with a few hundred dollars a month per child. Mark Steer is director of the policy group. He says the child tax credit reduced poverty for 5.3 million people. He says policymakers have the power to help address childhood poverty again, and thinks Congress should not pass corporate tax breaks unless it also expands tax credits for families.
We're telling Congress people that they ought to make a deal. We're not crazy about some of those corporate tax cuts. Well, if we're going to give tax cuts to billionaires, we ought to be giving help to the poorest kids in our country. And that's a deal we can live with.
Finally, our Deborah Van Fleet lets us know a new federal grant is giving schools in three Missouri counties and St. Louis City a fresh look at the challenges of students of color living with disabilities.
Missouri students of color with disabilities face harsher school disciplinary practices than their white peers, which can lead them into the juvenile justice system. Disrupting this path is the goal of the Missouri Juvenile Justice Association's STOP project. Miranda Frederick with the council says its research, as well as the lived experience of some of its members, has demonstrated this disparity.
When students experience harsh, disproportionate disciplines happening in the school systems, it puts them on a path to interact with the criminal justice system. And so that's what's known as that school-to-prison pipeline. And those suspensions can have long-term effects.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. Member and listener-supported are at Great Radio Stations, your favorite podcast platform, and find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, December 15th. Local early morning temperatures range from 9 degrees in Steventown to 25 in Kingston. Regional average soil temperature is 36 degrees and snow is coming to town. How much depends on where you are. The whole region is under a snow warning and the hills are under a winter storm warning. The morning will already be showing the telltale solid gray blanket covering the sky. Conditions will be freezing in the mountains today. Down on the ground, it will be cold with a high of 36, happening at 1 p.m. Snow chances arrive around 4 p.m. for everybody. Down on the ground, it could be mixed and we'll see a few inches fall overnight. For the elevated areas, a couple feet could fall. Just be ready for everything. Matter of fact, tomorrow, just stay inside. Numbers are still fluctuating, but we could see another couple inches to over a foot of snow through the day with a high of 36. Overnight, a little more snow drops and we get a low of 33. Saturday, snow totally vacates by noon and we get a high of 39. Driving Saturday night will be dangerous with surface ice forming after dark. Sunday, partly cloudy and dry with a high of 34. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:13 a.m. Looking way up, we see flare chances are up 75% for M and 15% for X class eruptions. Solar wind speed is currently 354 kilometers per second at 3.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 174, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. I hope everybody's got good tires on their car.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter W. Bone of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
Honey, did you know the Roelof Janssen Community Library serves Ancrum, Copaic, and Hillsdale?
As a matter of fact, I did know that. Ask me another.
Did you know that the Rojan Library has thousands of books, audiobooks, DVDs, and music CDs you can enjoy for free?
Yep, I knew that too.
Did you know that the Rojan Library puts on dozens of special programs like concerts and lectures, story time for kids, and seminars on computer skills and estate planning?
Uh-huh.
Well, Smarty Pants, is there anything about the Rojan Library you don't know?
Yeah, how do they get all that great stuff done with just 3 employees?
It's all about the volunteers. The library depends on volunteers for everything from working the circulation desk to staffing special events. They can always use more help.
Sounds like fun. How can I become a volunteer?
Just go to the library's website at rojanlibrary.org and click on the volunteer tab.
Hey, I knew that.
Sure you did.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wave Farm radio app on your smartphone. Our website is WGXC.org.
You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra
Catskills.
Today,
East Durham.
Unsilent Night is an original composition by Phil Klein, written specifically to be heard outdoors in the month of December. He's been holding them at various cities around the world since 1992. Special composition for boombox radios, where multiple speakers make one shimmering seasonal composition. This year, one of the locations for Unsilent Night is in Kingston, New York. That's on December 16th from 6 to 7 p.m. Go to unsilentnight.com for more information about the specific location that will be announced shortly. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about all sorts of local events.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The details of today's meeting, I'd like to underscore for the American people that we understand the hardship that high inflation is causing and that we are strongly committed to bringing inflation back down to our 2% goal.
Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, announced interest rates will rise 0.5 percentage point as part of a long-term strategic move to combat inflation. Powell pointed to price stability as a responsibility of the Fed, which serves as a bedrock to the economy. He added ongoing increases will be needed to ensure inflation gets to the Fed's goal of 2%. Matthew Haynes, the owner of Club Q in Colorado Springs, testified before the U.S. House Oversight Committee about anti-LGBTQ violence. He never imagined his bar being the target of the next hate crime. He hopes to work with local elected officials and community leaders in Colorado Springs to make LGBTQ events safe.
I know that we, our Club Q community, are in the thoughts and prayers of so many of you. Unfortunately, these thoughts and prayers alone are not saving lives. They are not changing the rhetoric of hate.
Several immunology and public health experts testified before the House Coronavirus Subcommittee about preparing for the next public health emergency. Dr. Kizmikia Corbett, an assistant professor at Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health, said she wants the committee to revisit the good and the bad of the pandemic.
The truth is that while we would all like to put the pandemic behind us, one fact remains. The virus and the medical and social implications of it are here to stay. In fact, just in the past week in this country, we have averaged over about 60,000 cases per day.
Members of the House are slated to vote on a one-week stopgap measure to have more time to develop a budget for the federal government. Democrats have been trying to get the one-week continuing resolution passed, but it has little bipartisan support. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy criticized how Democrats have handled this year's budget process.
The talk of the majority right now who wants to put a small continuing resolution to bump all the members up 2 days before Christmas, to try to vote on a package they cannot read, written by two individuals who will not be here, on spending for the entire government.
Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin announced a special election will be held to fill the Virginia 4th District seat. The seat was previously held by Representative A. Donald McEachin, who died on November 28th. The last day candidates can file to run is December 23rd. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Recent revelations from a disgraced cryptocurrency CEO gives us a glimpse of just how much campaign money flows into our election system, both what gets reported and what's called dark money. In an interview with journalist Tiffany Fong, FTX crypto exchange CEO Sam Bankman-Fried, now in custody in the Bahamas, admitted that he had not only given $40 million to Democrats and Democratic PACs to fund primary races, but he said he also gave an equal amount of dark money to Republican candidates. It's not yet known which dark money organizations, but typically 501c3 and 501c4 nonprofits, limited liability corporations, and other instruments are used to shield donor identities. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington has since filed a campaign finance complaint with the Federal Elections Commission. Crew suggested that Bankman-Fried contributed as much as $37 million more than was reported to the FEC, and says that while the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision allows independent expenditure to groups, it doesn't allow those groups to pass through donations directly to candidates. Several politicians, including Arizona U.S. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, have reportedly returned money given to them by Bankman-Fried. We have links to the campaign funding transparency website Open Secrets and more details on the allegations at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
I'm calling from somewhere.
On the Weeknd's 2022 album Dawn FM, he works with experimental artist 10 Tricks Point Never. It's kind of like Michael Jackson collaborating with Merzbow. On the album Dawn FM, 10 Tricks Point Never seems to contribute continuing skits based on radio broadcasts, which you can hear on these two tracks, the title track Dawn FM and the pop tune Out of Time with The Weeknd and 10 Tricks Point Never.
Listening to 103.5 Dawn FM. You've been in the dark for way too long. It's time to walk into the light and accept your fate with open arms. Scared? Don't worry. We'll be there to hold your hand and guide you through this painless transition. But what's the rush? Just relax and enjoy another hour of commercial-free music on 103.5 Dawn FM. Stay tuned.
Now I can't keep you from
don't you dare touch that dial. Because like the song says, you are out of time. You're almost there, but don't panic. There's still more music to come before you're completely engulfed in the blissful embrace of that little light you see in the distance. Soon you'll be healed, forgiven, and refreshed, free from all trauma, pain, guilt, and shame. You may even forget your own name. But before you dwell in that house forever, here's 30 minutes of easy listening to some slow tracks on 103.5 Dawn FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We welcome to the studio Gary Nelson. Gary has a long history in Troy and elsewhere of advocacy in the areas of transportation and the environment. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Gary, you graduated from RPI. You've had employment in the private sector, in the public sector, municipalities, and federal government, and been active in a series of nonprofit organizations. It's quite an impressive history and passion. You're currently serving on the Troy Council's Sustainability Task Force. Will you tell us what that is and how your role in that is contributing to change in the environment?
Well, I hope it's contributing to change. It is a task force that was established by the city council, and I was one of the original appointees. This is, 2019, I believe, when we started up. Most of our activity right now is focused on engaging Troy in the state's Clean Energy Communities program, and that basically consists of a number of actions that a city can take in order to gain points and scores, which potentially have grants attached to them back to Troy. But our main focus in terms of the community is a number of campaigns. And we have a flyer out, and one should look at the Troy City website, by the way, to find where that is somewhere on the website. But there are four basic campaigns we're trying to emphasize that can get people involved in contributing to the reduction of greenhouse gases. They are solar power with both a community and rooftop component, electric vehicles, clean heating and cooling, and demand response energy metering. Of these, I really think that the rooftop solar is the most promising. As many people know, Troy had a very active program of Solarize Troy, and I, in fact, participated in that at the time. And this is about 10 years ago now. But it succeeded in getting a lot of rooftop solar capacity in Troy. I have to mention one of the barriers to that is the regulations by National Grid that limit you to 110% supposedly of your power consumption in terms of solar installation. Frankly, I don't think I got anywhere near that. But I also think it's irrational to limit the rooftop installations. If you got the rooftop and you got the money, you should generate solar. And I think that showing up as being important to counteract the increased demands for air conditioning in the summer now. In the longer run, of course, we've got a problem of storage. And I think that can be solved, again, by a program that actively shows you how and where to purchase a complete installation for both the solar generation and perhaps wind generation in addition to that and the storage. But that's where we certainly have to go in the future. Electric vehicles, of course, are substituting one kind of vehicle for another, and I think there's a more basic problem of modal service and choice in cities there, which we can talk about. The clean heating and cooling, geothermal is coming. Troy is pursuing a demonstration project on that in the Monument Square area, and hopefully that'll be expanded over time. The demand response is a program run by the utility National Grid, and one can sign up for it. I think it benefits mainly large utility users, but it is to say that the you're metering your consumption according to the time of day and therefore potentially the reduction of greenhouse gases by the timing of your consumption.
In 2018, the city council adopted a new comprehensive master plan, and the Sustainability Task Force was part of that. It also addressed areas of concern that you've had for a long time in terms of transportation. What can you share with us about the situation now and what we inherited from past decisions, either positive or negative?
Well, first of all, let me say that a comprehensive plan is really a pro forma document. I mean, this originates in federal requirements under the housing program. If you want federal money, you shall have a comprehensive plan. How much of development that controls is another issue. And I like to cite a statement I heard a long time ago when I saw a presentation by Tony Nellison, who is a fairly famous urban planner and architect. And he's the initiator of what's called the visual preference survey. And so you go into a community and ask, what would your community like to, or what kind of community would you like to have? And the answer he got in one case was, well, we'd like Paris. Okay, well, everybody likes Paris. You know, great architecture, not high-rises, spread out on boulevards. You ignore the traffic on the Champs-Élysées. But, you know, people would like a good urban environment that is really classical. And Troy had that. And unfortunately, Troy gave that away. And you really have to go back into the reasons why that happened. And we could discuss that further. But I think the comprehensive plan, and I participated in it before I got on the sustainability task force, the one thing I inserted in that was to restore rail passenger service to Troy. We have the right-of-way. It comes all the way up to Adams Street from South Troy there. It is the remnant of what was a direct service all the way from New York City by the New York Central. And rail access was central to the creation of urban downtowns. And when that went away, and in the case of passenger service for Troy, that was 1958, the location itself lost its potential for development. And I think from that you can trace all the further problems that Troy went through. But to tear down the architecture is not a solution to the problem. And we have the example just recently of, okay, declaring unfit the building that was next to the police offices there. Well, you're either interested in preservation and will invest in the buildings, or you will bring in an engineer who says, all right, it's got a little defect there, and we're going to tear it down. Okay, that was the county's responsibility, but I think it's just one more continuation of a bad policy of not having sufficient interest in the form of Troy and just using excuses to demolish things in the hopes that something will sprout up. And something that sprouts up is never as good as what was there, quite frankly. But on the other hand, we look at the Uncle Sam Mall, the atrium. And I just recently processed a number of my old slides from the early 1970s showing when they demolished the area for that and they put up the parking garage. And now we come full circle these many years later. I counted almost 50 years. And we're taking down the parking garage and trying to go back to a mixed-use development. Well, okay, that's progress. That is good. But I think it's indicative of the mistake that was made in the first place. And to me, the major mistake of that project, which again was a big bunch of federal money coming down that the city really couldn't manage properly, but the brilliance of Troy, just in terms of its layout, was the way the streets were platted. And what we had was a number of the streets that go strictly north-south, except for River Street. River Street happens to follow the bend of the Hudson. And what that did was create a very interesting set of squares. Monument Square survives. Franklin Square is gone. That's totally obscured. But the real center of the downtown, the 100% corner in real estate terms, the center of commerce, was really the square that was created where Fulton comes out onto River Street. And that is particularly what the parking garage and the plans for the atrium distorted. So basically, the Uncle Sam Mall put a big square overlaid on the street pattern, eliminated